You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into a Wednesday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to give you the latest and greatest on the Brooklyn Nets. Lately, hasn't been so much of the greatest. The Nets have dropped 16 of 18. Nonetheless, we have an exciting podcast for you. The snow is falling heavily outside of my apartment, but we're not going to let that or the Nets losing ways stop this from being a good one. So, obviously, at this point, Josh would have normally chimed in. He is stuck in Costa Rica. Really a tough break for him. But in his place, we are going to be having on the NBA's Marcus Barahal to talk about his job, Nets Warriors last night, and maybe some of the Western Conference playoff race. I don't know. We'll see what we get into. But before that happens, I want to talk Nets Clippers and Spencer Dinwiddie's career high 27-point night in a 123-120 loss. So this one was really kind of on the starter, Spencer Dinwiddie. At least scoring the basketball, one of his worst games of the season, didn't make a shot. He only had 6 points, and he was one of four starters in single digits. Damari Carroll, the only one who stood out with 20 points, 6 of 11 from three-point range. But then the bench really stepped up. All four guys who played had excellent games. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, 15, 8, and 5. The first time he really looked totally back from injury. Dante Cunningham, 14 and 3, continued his consistent contributions, an obvious upgrade over Quincy Acey, the way he's been playing. Joe Harris, it's something Kenny Atkinson has talked about, particularly after this game, just how thankful he is for Harris and the fact that he just knows what he's getting on a night-to-night basis. And like the shots aren't always going to be falling. He's not going to be automatic from three-point range night in and night out, but he's going to get the same effort, same level of intensity. And Harris, anytime he's out there, will find a way to do something positive for this team. But again, we have to start with the efforts of Caris LeVert. 27 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds in just 29 minutes, 11 of 19 from the field. Really put on a show shooting the 3-ball hit. I believe 3 of them in the fourth quarter. A couple were from really deep. And he just got into a rhythm. And earlier in the season when this guy couldn't hit a shot, I'd be stunned if you told me he had a game at any point this year where he went 5 of 7 from 3-point range. But he's just kind of figured it out, and I know there have been stretches where he really hasn't shot the 3-ball well, but you just watch him go up and down. Now the motion looks repeatable, and his touch rising and firing is frankly just excellent, and he has clearly gotten into a rhythm at this point in the season, and complementing that with attacking the rim. Those three threes he hit in the fourth were part of an 8 of 10 run from range for the Nets to start the fourth quarter. And that's kind of what separated them in this game, where they were struggling. They were down by 12 at halftime, and they made this great run in the third and fourth to come back. And they actually had a 4-point lead with a minute 40 left in this game, and it was because of the shooting. And then the Clippers come back. They get a bucket. LeVert comes back down, drives on DeAndre Jordan. I would say got fouled, gets knocked to the ground, doesn't get called. Still makes a really tough layup, kind of what he's been doing all year, his ability to go to the basket, take contact and finish, not really in question. So I don't really know what else to say. It was just an outstanding game for him. And then for the Nets as a whole, kind of a disappointing finish. Obviously, they had that 4-point lead. They missed there. I think Austin Rivers hit a corner three. And then Lou Williams comes down at the end and puts it away with a layup after LeVert, his one bad play on the night, turned it over looking for Hollis Jefferson. But it's kind of frustrating on the offensive end for the Nets down the stretch because they had that turnover with LeVert, just kind of tried to force it after doing a Nash dribble underneath the baseline, and no one was really open. And they had another possession before that where Spencer Dinwiddie had the basketball and just kind of slowed it down and turned it into a one-on-one affair, when the Nets have, I think, all season derived a lot of their offensive success from swinging the ball around the perimeter and making stuff happen that way. And instead, Dinwiddie just kind of dribbled into a three. It's something I would have expected. Added D'Angelo Russell, not Dinwiddie, and was an end of a disappointing night for him, even though he did have 10 assists, 5 rebounds, and 3 steals. So, I mean, give him credit for contributing, but again, just not really his night. All right, I'm trying to think. Any kind of ancillary stuff from this game? It was cool to see Chris Carino, the Nets radio broadcaster, get a chance on the TV broadcast. I'm not quite sure what Ian Eagle was up to. Maybe just a scheduled rest day for him. Didn't want to make that cross-country flight. Ryan Rucco, probably busy with Yankees spring training. But Chris Carino getting a shot at calling the game on TV. And he did a really good job. And I think people kind of underestimate just how tough it is to make that transition to radio and from radio to TV and vice versa, particularly when you're not doing it all the time, because radio is kind of a play-by-play guy's medium, and you just get to go all out, describe everything. TV, you got to highlight your analyst. You got to be a little bit more subtle in terms of description, because obviously people can see what's going on. And I thought Carino did that actually like really seamlessly. Like, he's arguably, like, you can make a case that he's better than both Eagle and Rucco, kind of laying off on the description when something's obvious. So I kind of like that. I thought he had a really good broadcast, even if he doesn't have quite the highs of those other two. It was a tough start for the Nets in this one. They were moving really slowly on offense. There was a lot of stagnation. The Clippers got out to a 10-0 lead. And then even through the second quarter, the Nets were getting killed in transition. The Clippers had really active hands, and it looked for a little bit like they were going to kind of overwhelm the Nets just with their athletic ability and ability to get out and run. And this is something I talked about with Josh last time the Clippers and Nets faced off in Barclays, I think a week or two back. This team really does remind me of that Denver Nuggets team from 4 years ago, where there's not really a clear superstar. Like, obviously you could make the case that DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams are borderline all-stars, but they're just like fun, and they just have like eight really, really good players. Even with Danilo Gallinari out, they just bring someone like Sam Decker off their bench, who's a young guy I really like. So just really like 8-9 deep, and like even guys like Milos Teodosic, I think he's one of my favorite players to watch in the league. Definitely one of my favorite rookies to watch in the league with his ability to pass the basketball. So I think there's something to that. And if you're looking at an example of what the Nets could be in a few years, and maybe for some people this is kind of discouraging if you have higher expectations, but I would look no further than the Clippers. Like, I wouldn't say the Nets quite have that depth of talent now, but you look at the career trajectories for guys like Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Joe Harris, Russell, Dinwiddie. You see like a really deep team with a lot of really good players, and it's possible that, like, I mean, I don't know, I have high hopes for LeVert, and obviously Allen, it's very much an unknown at this point. Like, but even if none of those guys end up being all-stars, I think you could kind of have a team where there's just a ton of depth and a lot of really good players. And the Atlanta Hawks, even though I think they ended up having four all-stars on that team, I think they were a pretty good example of, in the East, just how effective that could be a few years ago, and you're not going to beat the LeBron James of the world, but you might have a chance to make a conference finals run with a group of that level of talent in the Eastern Conference. That's also assuming playoff reform isn't on the way, but I'm getting way ahead of myself there. Anyways, point being, I think the Nets have an interesting future, and it could look a lot like this current iteration of the Los Angeles Clippers. All right, let me see. Final thoughts on this one. There was a really cool play where Caris LeVert, and this is just a testament to what kind of night he was having. He was kind of speeding through the lane, through like a really quick kind of shuffle pass to Jared Allen, and he threw it so hard, Allen wasn't even expecting it, bounced off his chest, went right back to LeVert, and he put in like a short little floater. So that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. LeVert, personal 8-0 run, 3 assists, 3 in the fourth quarter. That was awesome. Yeah, and then just how tentative they were down the stretch. There really wasn't any ball movement, and we're going to get into that in the Warriors game with Marcus, because the same things kind of bogged the Nets down at points in that one. But without further ado, here is, let's take a quick ad break. And then after the break, we'll be back with Marcus Barrall. Welcome back into a Wednesday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. As promised, the NBA's Marcus Barrall joining us on the pod. And Marcus, this technically isn't your first time recording a Locked On Nets. You've put together a 30-minute lost episode that, according to Josh Bass, is the greatest in the show's history. But I have no evidence that it was ever done. So.
Well, we'll be releasing that in the summer. Keep your eyes peeled and your ears open, I guess.
Yeah, depending on where LeBron ends up going. If he goes to the Lakers, we'll put it out. If he stays at the Cavs, we're keeping it.
All right. So Mark is fortunate enough in his line of work to watch more basketball games than just about anyone. Now, maybe Zach Lowe could compete with you.
I think we're pretty even.
Yeah.
We usually text about it.
I'd say, what do you think you watch? Because you watch about like a game a night, I'd say, on average, right?
Yeah, probably like five a week.
And then like highlights, like a lot of highlights
on
top of that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So pretty full NBA slate. And just so happened that while our good friend Josh is in Costa Rica, you watched Nets Warriors last night. We'll get more into details. I just wanted like some general takeaways on the Nets. Obviously, you've seen them a couple times this year, but general thoughts.
Yeah, so I hadn't watched the Nets. I watched them a lot at the beginning of the year, but I hadn't seen them much in 2018. And they're just as scrappy as ever, I guess, is my biggest takeaway.
Wow.
They're still,
thank you.
Yeah, they're still playing hard.
Lost 16 of 18.
Yeah, but they're still, I mean, like, because they gave up a 25-0 run, and they were still leading at halftime.
Yeah,
which is, like, seems impossible to do.
Yeah, in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Keep in mind.
Yeah. They were down by 21 in the first, and I was watching on the Warriors feed, so I was getting their announcers, and they just kept complimenting the Nets on how a team that's, like, now 25 games under 500 that doesn't have their pick, doesn't have, like, a lot of established guys in that situation, down 21 on the road in the first quarter to the defending champs, would usually just pack it in. But this Nets team just kept coming back, kept scrapping, clawing. Guys like LeVert off the bench, Rondé off the bench were really bringing energy, and they seemed like they really care, I guess.
Yeah, no, and that's kind of been the story of the season with this team. And Kenny Atkinson, if you want to question his bona fides as a strategist or play caller, you definitely can't question like the degree that he motivates his team. And again, like we've seen time after time, they get down by 20 or more points, 10 and 13 on the year in games decided by 5 points or less. They've played the most games in the league in games decided by 5 points or less. So that's kind of been the story. They rarely get blown out. And on a night, they're in Golden State, losing game after game after game, and I guess every reason to give up, and they fight their way back into it. I mean, that being said, I think it was pretty obvious, like the Warriors took their foot off the pedal. And from a Golden State perspective, I thought it was interesting because the run that they had was almost entirely spurred by the brilliance of Steph Curry and him just taking over the game. And then he goes out, Durant's in, Draymond's in, Klay's in, and the Nets just dominate that unit. And it kind of reaffirmed what I think Steve Kerr has said a couple of times, and I'm always really interested in these discussions, especially because he's probably the most knowledgeable person on
smart
this in
guy.
The world. But, I mean, getting to coach both of them. But I always find it interesting when he said, like, Durant's probably the better player, but Curry's the one more important to the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I kind of question the logic. I'm like, if Curry's more important, are you just saying in the context of this team is more important, or if he'd be more important to any team, doesn't that inherently make him better, even if Durant's more complete? That's always, like, a really interesting conversation, and I guess you're getting kind of, like, definitional. But it just, like, is that a word? I don't know. But it is interesting, and I thought we just kind of saw it firsthand in this one, like, just how crucial Curry is, like, relative to Durant.
Yeah, Steph was just unbelievable in that 25-0 run. He was just pulling up from 3-4 feet behind the arc and making it easily. He was gave like a half shimmy at one point where he kind of turned to the sideline and thought about shimmying, maybe held back. That's reserved that for Tim Hardaway Jr., I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think Steph's gravity that he brings just opens things up for everybody else, and it allows guys like Draymond to have, who's a good playmaker, especially for a guy his size, but to have that 4-on-3 opportunity is really like what gives him an extra step.
Yeah. We were talking about this before the podcast, but we kind of got hungover All-Star game Draymond Green this time. He dropped like 4 passes, I think. Like Steph hit him for like 2 open layups and he just missed. I think he had a dunk that went off the side of the rim at one point.
6 turnovers.
Yeah.
So not great.
Yeah.
I remember Steph had one pass to him that was like a really nice pocket pass where Draymond was rolling.
He like hopped.
He had a wide open layup and he just kind of bounced it like off his own knee out of bounds.
Yeah.
I don't know. Weird season for Draymond, I would say.
Yeah, but I guess getting back to Curry, like I thought it was just kind of cool because I know Steve Kerr said this going into the season that like he thought this is like the most complete Steph Curry's ever been as a player, and obviously he was dealing with injury issues earlier in the year and hasn't really been able to get into rhythm up until just before the All-Star break and then the 10 or so games since. But I think you really, like any Nets fan who watched this game, I think you really saw Steph at his peak. And like personally, like I kind of understood what Kerr meant at this point. It was just like kind of a total mastery of his game in that like not only was like the shooting as spectacular as ever, but he's figured out how to leverage that as well as possible. And you see it in so many different ways, like pump faking by guys, like as you said, like in transition, like he'll like throw in like a little hesitation and like every single guy on the defense freezes because he's the most dangerous guy on the floor. And he's just
I think you used the perfect word. Just based on his gravity, he's able to get guys layups almost any time he wants, or get to the basket and finish himself. And that combination with like all the little fakes he has in the starting and stopping and being athletic enough to jump and do stuff in the air, like I think he's really like unguardable at this point.
I think a lot of what separates him too is that he doesn't settle. Like a lot of guys, if you hit 2 threes in a row and you catch it on the wing, you're gonna pull up regardless of how close the defense is closing out. But he'll kind of, if the guy closes out too hard, he'll give a fake and drive in, look for somebody. He's not always going to force it just because he feels like he might be hot, which is big.
Yeah, so we mentioned the 34 points for him in 34 minutes, and then the Nets having that spectacular run to get back into it. It was 25-0 at one point, 29-2 overall for the Warriors. Then the Nets 19-2, then 25-4 to take the lead. Eventually, I think it was 39-13 by the time they had a five-point edge at half. And that was really driven by both Caris LeVert and frankly, the entire bench unit, but I just remember him like beating Durant to the rim on a dunk. And you were telling me of a fascinating conversation you were having with a coworker of yours, Matt Drexler.
Shout out to Drex.
Shout out. Hopefully, he's a lifelong Nets fan. He could actually subscribe to the podcast. That'd be great. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. But and you guys kind of frequently debate the potential of Caris LeVert against Jared Allen, and I thought that was kind of a cool conversation because Josh and I have danced around that on the year, but never really directly had it. And like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, what angle do you kind of usually take on that?
Yeah, I think they're both good, obviously, and I think they both have a bright future.
Great.
But yeah, they're both very good. I personally would take Caris just because I like the diversity of skills, I guess, that he brings. Like Jared Allen, you know what he is. He's going to be a rim running big. He can play defense and block shots. I think Caris as a playmaker can bring more to the table, and he's long enough on defense where he can help you on that end too. And I think he's just has more versatility, even though he's older than Jared Allen. I know Matthew Drex, or aka Little Drex, is a big Jared Allen guy and sees him as being a potential all-star center, which, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree. I just think, I guess that's just how high I am on Caris.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And what's kind of interesting about Allen is like coming in, and like I'm not putting this on other people. This is what Josh and I thought too. Like, you expected someone who was just extremely raw and had a lot of athletic ability. But what surprises me about him is just how skilled he is at this point. And obviously that's been like an exponential leap from early in the season. But like his ability now to catch the ball, like pivot and throw it out to a three-point shooter on the opposite side of the court, to be creative around the rim. Like we were talking about when they played Cleveland the other week, he got like LeBron James on a fake. He didn't make the shot, but just like little moments like that, and like just how intuitive he is around the basket. Like, to me, that's like that's shocking that he's that good. But it also like lowers his ceiling a little bit because he already is like kind of, Not like extremely far. Like, obviously there's like a lot of stuff he can still develop, and he doesn't really have any kind of post game at this point. But just because that stuff is already there, it makes me think there's a little bit less room to grow than I initially thought. And then like the bigger thing, and this is what we were saying at the beginning, just physically the difference between the two of them. And the biggest thing for Allen was like, if he was built like a Joel Embiid, like I'd be projecting him to be like an 8-time All-Star. Like, that's how high I am on his athletic ability and like skill set. But LeVert like really does have kind of like an ideal build for a guard. You don't really see too many guys like him, just kind of 6'5", really skinny, but his speed and coordination, I think it was summed up on that play where he stole the ball and like Durant was going after him. And just his, like, I don't want to say like courage, because I don't know if that's a word that should be associated with basketball, but kind of basketball courage to just like have it in transition, like whether it's Durant, Draymond, like he'll challenge those guys at the rim like again and again and again. And we saw how good the shot is getting the night before. Like, his all-around game and his passing ability is just like ridiculous. And I mean, I guess the only hesitation with him is that he's already like, I think, 24 years old.
Yeah, and I think what you were saying about him continually driving in on guys, I feel like, I didn't watch him in college, but I feel like he's gotten a lot of that from Rondé, maybe just because Rondé's a guy who will barrel into the paint and just try to either draw contact or get inside. And I think that element has helped Caris to expand his range outside when he can drive in and have those two options basically that can act as
counterweights.
Yeah,
and I guess the only other real takeaway from this one, I mean, the game kind of went predictably. Like, Brooklyn had their big comeback, ran out of energy, Golden State dominated the second half, was D'Angelo Russell. You caught him on a good night. And so, I mean, obviously that kind of clouds your opinion a little bit, because there are a lot of nights where he doesn't look this good, but what did you see out of him? 20 points, 8 assists on the game.
Yeah, I've been really low on him this whole season.
Yeah,
probably has rubbed off on me, but... he looked really good. He looked impressive. The Warriors broadcast kept complimenting him. They kept saying that he was not looking for his own shot, that he was looking to set up teammates and looking to kind of lead this young team, even though he is only 21 himself. And I definitely saw that in this game. From the past games I had watched, he didn't seem to be looking to necessarily create, and the fit with him and Dinwiddie is still, I think, developing, but this definitely looked a lot better.
Yeah, I think he was, like, a lot more judicious in, like, when to shoot and when to pass in this game, because that's kind of been the big thing for him, like, balancing those. Like, earlier in the season, he would, like, shoot, like, every time he got the basketball unless someone was wide open, and then when he came back, he wasn't aggressive enough, and then recently he has balanced it better, but still takes some really bad shots. In this game, there was only one time where I think he had JaVale McGee on a switch, and instead of trying to go by him, he just pulled it for a three. And I guess the big thing, like, people forget with him is that he's not an elite athlete, and he's not great at getting to the rim, and he mostly relies on kind of being more cunning and hesitations and head fakes and different things like that to get to the basket. But when you have those situations where you get a big on you, that's when you got to attack, and he's settled. But this game, I think you made a good point that he was a lot better at that. And, like, I think the very first or second play of the game was him diving in and kicking it out to Spencer Dinwiddie for a three. And the big issue for the Nets of late has been those two not playing off each other and making each other better. And I mean, at least at this point, like, obviously, like, you look at, I think we both think, like, Karis and Jared Allen are kind of the future of this team. But right now, D'Lo and Dinwiddie, it's guys who are obviously both still young, are probably their two best players. So you obviously want to see those two making each other better. And that hasn't really been the case up to this point, but a small flash of that there. All right, we'll take one final break and then come back and give you some quick thoughts on the Western Conference playoffs.
Attention, cancer victims. If you or a loved one lived, worked, or visited Lower Manhattan in the months after the 9/11 attacks and have been diagnosed with cancer, federal benefits and health care may be available. Attorney Eddie Markowitz has helped many families recover substantial benefits from the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund. The James Zadroga Health and Compensation Act has been extended, but time is limited. Attorney Markowitz is proud to serve as counsel to the Zadroga family. Let him help you too. These benefits are not just for rescue workers, but to anyone who qualifies. The fund covers many cancers, including prostate, skin, lung, and breast. Please call 1-800-LAW-HELP. That's 1-800-LAW-HELP to see if you qualify.
And welcome back in to the Locked On Nets podcast. Marcus Barahal, fortunately, still with me.
Hello.
To talk Western Conference playoff standings, and there has been quite the shakeup. The Portland Trailblazers, the 3 seed, New Orleans Pelicans, the 4 seed. I think, let me see, Portland 39-26, just 5 games up over the 4.5 games up over the Utah Jazz in 10th. So clearly, like, a lot could change in the coming days. OKC 2 games up over the Jazz. So plenty of room for these teams to flip-flop. But, Marcus, I want to start off as the guy who watches all these teams on a fairly regular basis. Mm-hmm. What's been going on with the Pelicans? Because I mean, obviously, Anthony Davis has been great, and Damian Lillard's been equally great for the Trailblazers. But that team, like, on a very surface level, even with DeMarcus Cousins, just had no tertiary talent. But all of a sudden, without Cousins, they've won 9 games in a row.
Yeah, not to toot his horn too much, but my guy Matthew Drexler has long been on the front of Boogie's been holding AD back.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know if I agree totally with that, but the fit is definitely much smoother with just one big. And I think that...
A little Ewing theory action.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that with Davis and Emeka Okafor, who's playing well...
I didn't know.
He's back. Yeah.
He's like, isn't he like, his head looks like too big for his body now.
Yeah, he's a little bobbleheady, yeah. For sure. But with those two and with Drew Holiday's playing great, Rondo's somehow still playing basketball.
He's better than he was like 4 years ago on the Mavericks.
Yeah, he's having a second prime like Kobe. And Etuan Moore, one of my favorite players in the league, just lighting it up from deep. And I think that when you surround Davis with shooters and he's kind of the main big, as opposed to when you have Cousins as the main big and you have Davis kind of spaced out and then Cousins also spaced out, it's just a cleaner fit now. And I think Alvin Gentry, who's not a great coach in my opinion, has gotten better. And for example, I think this was last night. They were up by 3, and I don't remember who they were playing, but the team they were playing had no timeouts left, and they fouled up 3 with like 8 seconds left, which is like what you should do. But it's just surprising to see Alvin Gentry pull the trigger on that.
He's made some conference finals.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think he beat the Spurs maybe 1 year.
I think that was D'Antoni.
Wasn't it 2010 when they finally did it? And then like then they played the Lakers?
I think 2009, right?
Maybe. I don't know. No, it was like Nash's. I think they made. I finished reading the book on the 07 Suns, so I'm very pro Alvin Gentry. He's great.
He's okay.
Yeah. All right. But I'm with you. And I think it's a little bit of that, a little bit of Darius Miller, a little bit of Kolar Mirotic.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, those guys are playing well. I mean, the thing is, like, they've shot the ball well all year, and, like, that's kind of a tried and true formula. You put a bunch of 3-point shooters around a dominant big, and particularly
it's the Dwight Howard.
Yeah, and Anthony Davis like is similar to Dwight, but with like a lot more flexibility. Like last night, he had, I think, 4 threes and a quarter mm-hmm. at one point. So like his inside outside game, like all of a sudden you have like a very modern offense with a totally unguardable centerpiece. Yeah. And that like over a 9-game stretch, they've been, because a lot of those games have been close. Like they played a really close one against the Nets, like a few weeks mm-hmm. back that went into double OT.
Yeah.
And suddenly like everything comes together, you get in rhythm, you get some confidence. So I think that's a little bit of a mirage. Portland feels like a little bit realer. They've somehow like, obviously earlier in the season, it was like kind of one of the biggest, I forgot the word,
disappointments?
No,
Harbingers?
Aberrations.
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 Sure.
That's the word I'm looking for. It's one of the biggest aberrations I remember in the NBA, where they had, I think, like one of the top three defenses in the league mm-hmm. and had an offense that was like 24th or 25th, like a total flip from like the last three seasons they've been playing. And now that's really balanced out, where they've maintained a top 10 defense. Like, obviously, they're inevitably going to fall off a little bit, but behind Damian Lillard playing legitimately like an MVP candidate, they're all the way up to the three seed. And it feels like they like have enough guys all of a sudden to make a little bit of a run, maybe win in the first round.
Yeah, the biggest development for them this season has been Shabazz Napier, in my opinion. Sure. I like watched the Blazers for like a month stretch where I was doing their games like every other night, and he's just taken a huge step forward this year. He's, if Victor Oladipo hadn't been doing what he was doing, I would say he would be in the most improved conversation for sure. And guys like Al-Farouq Aminu, who is slept on, but he can play defense and he can knock down open threes. Yusuf Nurkic has been a tough presence inside, one that they didn't really have before at the center position. Lillard has gotten even better somehow, and nobody really notices that he's averaging 26.5 points per game.
Yeah.
Which is absurd, but
The run he had against the Lakers the other night was insane. The 4 threes in a row. Like I wasn't watching live, but Twitter was just like blowing. It was like kind of like when like Steph like first came on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting because like I've been saying for years, like he's kind of like a slightly poor man's version
like
of Steph.
85%?
Yeah, 85-90. But like he's Steph right now. Like that's like how he's playing, that's how he's shooting. And like again, like that we mentioned it, like the ability to leverage shooting into going to the rim, but he's even more explosive than Steph is. So at points, it's like even scarier than what Steph does.
Yeah, for sure. The only hole that they have really is at the small forward. Because I mean, they have Evan Turner. A lot of times they play Napier, McCollum, and Lillard together, which is super small and will only work against some teams, I guess. And that's really what makes this so interesting these last couple weeks, because a lot of this is going to depend on the matchup for not only the Blazers, but all the rest of these teams 3 through 10, where you could end up facing a team who maybe is better than another team on paper, but is a better matchup for you. So a lot of it, I think, is going to come down to that.
All right. If you're Houston or Golden State, like take all the teams behind them, which one kind of scares you the most in, I guess, any round, like a first, second conference finals matchup?
The Thunder, for sure.
Really? Yeah.
Because of Russ and Paul George and Steven Adams. I think that's just way more talent than any of the other teams have, even if they're not the best coached and they're not the best fit. I just think that that's a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to cheat a little bit and say the Spurs with a theoretically healthy Kawhi, but no, I'm with you. I mean, I guess the only thing that scares me about them is like just, I mean, I think the stats been thrown around a lot, but just how atrocious the defensive rating has been since Andre Roberson came out. I was kind of the opinion that, and maybe like I think in the playoffs, like it'll help a little bit more offensively not having Roberson, because that's obviously where he was kind of put out to dry the most. But on the defensive end, those issues aren't going away. And I'm, as a current Knicks fan, unfortunately, still of the opinion that Melo is washed. So
He's gone.
I think, but they still like play him big minutes, and now they're suddenly playing Corey Brewer big minutes. And it's like the same thing that like time after time after time has come back to bite them. And and it's funny because me and Josh had this conversation earlier in the year, but if you just like threw like Joe Harris into that lineup, like either in place of Melo or in place of Roberson, like I think they're pretty easily the third best team in the West, which seems like is a statement that's like I get some people would construe as insane, but I don't know, to me that's like kind of obvious.
No, I totally agree with that. Yeah, I think that they aren't super deep. Jeremy Grant's been okay for them. Raymond Felton is in the NBA. They just don't have a ton of depth, and a guy like Joe Harris would definitely help just to push everyone down a slot.
Yeah. And it's interesting because like everyone like considers like Sam Hinkie like this genius, and like obviously like give the guy credit, like Harden, Durant, Russ, like sorry, my fault. I do consider Sam Hinkie a genius.
That's two great Sams.
Yeah, Sam Presti. I mean, give him credit. Like I don't think like in NBA history, no one's drafting 3 MVPs in 3 straight drafts. Like that doesn't happen. But he is like failed like time and time again to put like a complete roster on these guys. And like he's had like great individual, like Steven Adams also like great individual pick. Getting Paul George this year, like I know obviously like Oladipo has turned that trade into like a fair one on paper, but given the disparity at the time, that was incredible. But
I don't even know if he's turned it into a fair one. I think the Pacers just won it. Like, yeah, they have a better record than the Thunder.
That's definitely fair. But I don't know. I'm just saying, like, this guy, like, year after year after year, and I think this is, like, ultimately the reason they broke up initially, and, like, certainly the reason Kevin Durant left is, like, they were just never able to get that fifth guy in their starting lineup, and they've taken shots on a million guys, and it was just never the right guy at the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of surprising. All right, let's finish up with this. Who do you see making the playoffs? Like, does anyone who's not currently in get in? Is Denver going to fall out? I guess.
I think the Clippers could get in. I could see them getting in over Denver. I think the Jazz are not going to make it. I think they're only a game out right now, honestly, but just looking at their team, I don't know if Donovan Mitchell has enough just as a rookie to keep powering through and leading that team every night. I think the Clippers are actually really well balanced. Tobias Harris is good. He's really good. And I think getting Avery Bradley back could help. Hopefully he comes back soon. DeAndre Jordan has gotten better at the free throw line. I think he's shooting 60% now, which is like really all you need to do to not be intentionally fouled. And Milos is good. I think that they have a very good balanced team. I think Denver, for as good as they are and as young as they are, they still don't have a point guard. They still are a little bit shaky on the wing with Barton. I don't totally trust him, but I think Millsap and Jokic is an incredible passing duo, probably the best two big man passing teammates in the league. But defensively, they're not great, and they don't have enough juice, I don't think. Gary Harris is good, but I don't think he's quite there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm actually like, I'm kind of like shout out to Mike Malone. Like, I'm surprised Denver is where they are.
For sure.
And they just had a whole thing, I think like it was last night where like they benched Jokic like the whole like fourth quarter. So that kind of scares me a little bit. I really do think I would put like both the Clippers and Utah ahead of them in terms of odds. And like, what's fascinating to me is like the Jazz, like fully healthy, they've played like a 50-plus win team. And
Jay Crowder's been good for them, too.
Yeah, and they've been probably better than anyone in the West outside of Golden State and Houston, if you just look at that, whatever, 20-game sample size. Yeah. But is that enough? And like, and the whole thing is like when you win like a bunch of games in a row, like that, obviously there's like a letdown at some point. And the cool thing is like all these teams play each other a bunch of times down the stretch. So it's going to kind of finish up that way. I tend to agree with you. And this is kind of a nice way to wrap up the podcast because I was talking about this on my own at the beginning and just kind of comparing the Clippers to that Nuggets team from like 4 or 5 years ago with Andre Iguodala as their best player, where they just had like 8 good guys. And so rarely is that kind of a strategy to build an NBA team. But I think just from like an objective perspective, and like I get why those teams aren't constructed, because they never result in titles, and they also don't result in lottery picks that can get you guys that can win you titles, NBA purgatory essentially. But I just think like it's cool to have like that middle class of team where just a bunch of good guys, and like, and it's fun to see them go against teams that are like really like star heavy or have like one star, even though it doesn't necessarily exist anymore either. They're just kind of cool, and I think the Pacers are kind of the Eastern Conference version of that. Anyways, just a random thought to end this podcast. Marcus, thanks so much for joining me. We will wrap it up. Right.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, God. All right.